Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Hey! You the guy from Ajax?
Yeah, you bet.
All right.
Who are you bringing the eighth? Yeah, well, they're on their way. I'm the supervisor. I don't carry this stuff. So who's bringing them, Freddy? Yeah, Freddy.
You're supposed to have been here over an hour ago, boy.
Well, traffic with murder. You know, one of those manure spitters jackknifed on the Santa Ana? God-awful mess. You should see my shoes. Ah, that's a terrific wing. I love this shape.
Hey, do us a favor, pal.
Name's Liddy. Gordon Liddy.
Gord, take a look at the seventh Fetzer valve, will you? I think it's been sticking.
It's probably the humidity.
That's funny. No, what I think it is myself is the bypass line.
That could be the bypass line, yeah. Maybe I should take a look at it.
Gordo. Back here?
Don't tell me my business, boy. Just checking the luggage. Somebody ought to clean these windows. There is a tremendous buildup of gook all over them. Look at that.
I think it's the bypass line, yeah.
Told you.
I'm going to need some pliers and a set of 30-weight ball bearings.
What?
Yeah. Tell you what, I got to go to my truck. If Fred gets here before I'm back, you can tell him to start without me.
What the hell you need ball bearings for?
Oh, come on, guys. It's so simple. Maybe you need a refresher course. Hey, it's all ball bearings nowadays.
It's after the hour of one, and this is the month of April in the year of our Lord, 2011. I think of a drawing near that ye might be amused and informed on this Wednesday. Excellent, indeed. Thank you for joining us. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming to you from high above the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. And this is the home of all good things. Not just Portland, not just Southeast Portland, but really, honestly, just this studio. The studio is a nexus of great. It's a nexus of wonderful. It's the epicenter, the nerve center, the bridge, the nucleus. It is the core. We are the essential DNA of this city's intelligence and humor. It all emanates from this. It's sort of a. It's a whackicality singularity is what it is, Don.
Whackicality?
Whackicality. Mm. That's not my word. That's Mike Chase's word from Mike and Amy's show. Yeah. Also whacktastic.
Mm.
There you go. In any event, I'm just saying it all comes to woe be unto you if something were to happen to us. I mean, if they were just to be, I mean, if even for a moment, I mean, if this show were to be interrupted, if something were to happen to the studio here, if we were not able to broadcast, to beam our goodness and truth to the people, I mean, the world would be a much sadder place, Don. I mean, it would just become a spiraling Frank Black-esque, no, not Frank Black. Who's the guy on Millennium? Jack Black? Frank Black?
That was Frank Black.
Really? I didn't think
that
could be right because I was thinking the Pixies guy.
No.
They're both Frank Black.
They're both Frank Black.
Oh, my God. I wonder if that was intentional. Hey, did you notice this? Did you notice on the last episode of The Killing that there was a character named Mulder?
Yes, I did notice that.
You remember who it was?
I found that delightful. I don't remember.
It was a doctor. Dr. Mulder. And I would go, I've always assumed that Holder and Mulder. Sorry, I'm just way too.
I barely knew her.
I know. But I always figured that Holder was a sort of nod to the name of Mulder, because they do have a sort of, you know, Mulder and Scully kind of vibe going on. But she was actually in the hospital, and she said, well, so-and-so, Dr. Mulder, if you'll just tell me about it. And they didn't really accent it that way, but that was one of those things. It was a great little, like, not even between the lines. It was just sort of like covering it. It was the entirety of the paper's contents right there in the middle of the show. For the longest time, they did this thing on a lot, and I think all the way up to... God, I think they do this on The Wire at one point. It couldn't have been more than 2, 3, 4 years ago. I know that the entire television world, and in fact, probably the world as a whole, the world at large, I know that we are all just sort of little tiny virtual puppets being moved around in the fever dream imagination of an autistic Tommy Westfall snow globe. But there was this thing where they would just work St. Elsewhere references into like every goddamn show on television, and especially in hospitals. I was watching the TV one night. They were doing like it was a crossover thing, and it was like a Law and Order into Homicide crossover again. And there were two separate St. Elsewhere references inside. There was one for each show. There was one and then they did it on The West Wing. I was just watching a West Wing rerun the other day, and I swear to God, it was like Ed Begley Jr. appeared as Dr. Victor Ehrlich. And they didn't even really draw attention to it. And I think he actually appeared as Victor Ehrlich on an episode of Arrested Development, too. It's all very weird, which is doubly strange because he also plays the guy with the missing hair on the Arrested Development.
And I was going to ask, wasn't there something on St. Elsewhere where at least one of the characters from The White Shadow showed up, like an actor who had been on The White Shadow with Ken Howard showed up?
It was... the character's name was Wallace, and he was a huge, towering black man. He was like 50 feet tall, and I forget which character he was in The White Shadow. But he was one of the orderlies, and he was an orderly along with. It's failing me.
I'm saying if it was the same character, then doesn't that by association mean that therefore The White Shadow also only existed
in that kid's autistic fantasy. I don't think he played the same character as the thing.
Because I know a couple of different White Shadow actors showed up on St. Elsewhere, but I believe that at some point at least one actor played the same character that he had played before. And then I think they had a moment in the elevator where he and Ken Howard looked at each other. It's like, don't I know you? No.
That did happen.
That
did happen, but I don't know if that was because he was supposed to be playing the same character or if it was just the same actor. In other words, if it was the two White Shadow actors and they'd put that in his little nod. My brain actually, you probably do this as well. And in fact, I think you said this yesterday, that you actually will confuse names that don't really sound similar to me, but that you store them in the same section of your brain. And so occasionally you'll reach in. It's like pawing around inside a dark cupboard for a can of tomato paste, and instead you bring out like chickpeas. And you go, well, I guess they're in the same. It looks just like Skinny and Sweet. They're in the same can or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that is how it works with me and a lot of actors. Is sometimes, like, to remember the full name of that character and the actor who played him, I, for some reason, need to remember the actor who played Luther Hawkins, who was his orderly sidekick. Because they had sort of a R2-D2 C-3PO, an Abbott and Costello kind of thing going on. But it was the two orderlies. Yeah, and in the larger order, his name was his Wallace. And he was from The White Shadow. And there was an episode where What's-His-Name was on there, and then an elevator together, and they looked at each other, and it was sort of a, you, do I did? No? No? Okay. And then the elevator opened, and bam. St. Elsewhere was... They didn't create the television in-joke because, you know, George Burns did a lot of that. But they really, at that time, they perfected it. It's probably been surpassed since then. But St. Elsewhere, I mean, especially for what was a pretty straight-ahead drama most of the time on a major network. I mean, it was a 10 p.m. drama Wednesday nights on NBC. And, I mean, really, they dealt with a lot of serious life and death issues and was very groundbreaking in a lot of the ways. I think they may be the first network program, I mean, other than like a soap opera or something, that actually had a character who had who got the AIDS. And he was? Mark Harmon.
Mark Harmon.
He played Dr. Bobby Caldwell, and then he was all slutting around because he's the world's sexiest man in a towel like 3 years in a row.
So apparently he was slutting around with, because as we know, really, you get the AIDS from other people through essentially, the butt sex. or from sharing needles.
No, no, wasn't. Well,
but he was undoubtedly doing one of those things.
No. Well, he might have done butt sex. I didn't show that or implied anyway.
Because HIV does not enter the bloodstream during a normal
You know when it enters the bloodstream, Dawn? When you're Dr. Bobby Caldwell and you're just a big horn dog and you shack up and roll in clover, as they say, with any girl that'll have you, including a crazy girl who, after the act of sex, takes a razor blade out from underneath her tongue and slashes your face and then her own and mixes her blood with you.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Because it
couldn't actually get it from the sexon.
It freaked my tiny little 11-year-old brain out because I watched it elsewhere when I was little kid. My mom loved it because my mom, you know, she was a nurse and so she had that whole thing with the medical drama and the whatever. But I remember watching. I'm like 11 or 12 and like you didn't really have, at 11 or 12, you don't really have a lot of experience with crazy chicks. I mean, you know, just my sister. And it's like, and not in a Bobby Caldwell kind of way. But they're like her beach house or something, and they're like, you know, getting it on and whatever. They never actually said, by the way, that that is where he got it. Now, it was strongly implied. They never actually said, which in a way is sort of more realistic, because they never... Because he wasn't an HIV drug user, and he wasn't, to the best of my knowledge, wasn't engaging in sex with the gays. So they never actually said that he got it from this girl. I think that it may have been two separate things. It may have been where he gets the HIV, but he realizes that because he has to go in and get a lot of tests done. Because again, he picks up this crazy chick. They're out at like a beach house somewhere. They have the sex, and it freaked me out because it's like this dimly lit scene, and she's on top of him, sort of a traditional cowgirl kind of a thing. They finish. And then he's like, "Well, that was great. I'm Mark Harmon." And you know, and she, and they just have this still shot, this static shot on her face, and they have telegraphed in a very subtle way that she is a little nutty. And there's just this, and you don't even see it right away. And the static shot is on her face, and you just hear this sort of, I can't even really do it, but you just hear this kind of sound, and it's like a metal. It is a metal on teeth sound, and it is the sound that like a really thin piece of metal makes. And you just hear this sort of. And you see something glint between her teeth, and you don't know what it is. And then she just leans down, and she does this sort of, like, across him motion, and he comes up, and his face has just been cut, like, from here to here. And so then I think it's the deal is that he goes to the hospital, because, like, hey, chick cut me up. And then I think after that, it's all coming back to me now, then they actually sit across the desk from him, and they say, Bobby, And it was early enough in the whole AIDS thing, you know, for most of the world anyway, that you could do the reveal. They didn't even call it HIV, and they didn't call it human immunodeficiency virus. They called it by, like, some chemical name. And they said, we think you've got ba-da-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And he goes, well, you know, that's got to be wrong. I'm Mark Harmon. And they, you know, and they said, well, you know, and he said, I've got AIDS. And then they, like, cut to black for the commercial. So I guess he didn't get it from the chick. I think that's how he was. So that is actually sort of a more responsible way to do it, because the implication was that he got it because he was just like a whore. I mean, he was just humping like anything that moved, including that chick that got raped by the creepy guy with the ski mask.
Yeah. Mark Harmon reminds me, particularly in that period, reminds me so much, both the way he speaks, his mannerisms, and the way he looks, of the handsomest of all boyfriends that I ever had. And so I always...
Wait, is this like a Dawn World boyfriend, or he reminds you of an actual boyfriend?
No, this is a real boyfriend I had. Not crazy Dawn World, actual real world boyfriend. And Mark Harmon, he was very much like a younger Mark Harmon. So I just always have had this deep a thing for Mark Harmon. It made me so angry when they just killed him out of the blue on the West Wing.
I'm sorry.
It made me so angry. First of all, so happy for CJ getting some. Also, she's going to get some with Mark Harmon, who's awesome. And then we're supposed to believe that he's a Secret Service guy who was on detail and apparently not wearing a bulletproof vest under his jacket.
Yeah, I got lots of...
And then the whole way they killed him was just so out of left field and just for shock value and annoying.
Well, and then they used that...
So angry.
And then they, of course, there was some sort of law passed that they then had to use that horrible Jeff Buckley version of Hallelujah, which I could do without hearing, like, ever. That episode to me It wasn't like, it wasn't like the nadir of Sorkin's 4-year tenure on that show. But the whole resolution of season 3 of The West Wing, I didn't really care for the whole Mark Harmon, CJ Craig storyline anyway, only because I found it sort of, as far-fetched as that show is in some ways, it's very much it is just sort of liberal wish fulfillment.
That was Mark Herman wish fulfillment.
I could see that, but my whole thing, here's the reason that we're so off the point. It's not even Thursday. It's Thursday somewhere, I guess, on Mars, maybe.
In Guam. It's always tomorrow in Guam.
And the thing is, 15 minutes, that means it'll be Friday on Mars. It'll be Thursday on Mars, five times during the show. But the thing I didn't like about that is that I found it patently unbelievable, and in fact, a little insulting, because if you think about it, The West Wing, I know that, conservatives bitch about that show all the time. And, I knew people who were real right-wingers and they wouldn't watch it. My in-laws wouldn't watch it. And I kept saying, it's a great show. Just get past the fact that it's liberal. And they're like, well, no. It hates America.
It's so preachy.
Well, it is. Aaron Sorkin would admit that. My whole thing is, The West Wing is actually a much more conservative show than people think. If you look at it as, the entire show is like a big love letter to people who work in government.
Yeah.
The whole thing is like a big wet kiss to civil service. And by the way, nearly every single one of the characters is deeply religious. And there are long, long, flowery sequences where they do nothing but rhapsodize about the glorious nature of God and divinity. So anyway.
And they want very hard to convince you that the democratic process works.
It's they have that in common with the Republicans. They're just lying to you and telling you that your vote matters. But so you think they'd be natural allies. But I found it, as much as that show really is a big love letter to government in some ways and people who work in government and the selfless nature, and how people in government are really smart and looking out for you, I found it actually kind of insulting that they would have Mark Harmon as the Secret Service agent who is so, unprofessional. It's not like he's guarding, a Frogurt shop somewhere.
No.
He's guarding, the White House press secretary. And then he allows himself to get off his game because he's all horny and wants to F her.
Yeah.
So much so that he gets hosed at the end. And it was just an excuse. It was also just an excuse to set up something horrible and then have it done to CJ, who I loved.
Yeah.
Everybody adored.
Yeah, it was a Joss Whedon sort of a moment. It was like, now that you love someone, we're going to take it away from you and we're going to break your heart.
It was pointless. Especially because you knew that they were never going to end up together, because you knew he was never going to be a regular cast member. And also you knew that she was going to end up with Danny Kincannon, which indeed she does, having many children and living in Idaho. So, I'm just saying.
With Mark Harmon.
But yeah, cut chick's face. And then he left, and then he ended up withering away to nothing and dying in a hospice. The end. Not in real life. That's just on St. Elsewhere. Why was I talking about St. Elsewhere?
Nah, I don't know.
Wait, hold on. Frank Black? White Shadow? Did we really go from Frank Black to White Shadow? We didn't do that, did we?
Not directly.
Well, in any event. So saying that's where we do all of these weird in-jokes. Well, for example, Victor Ehrlich's parents were played by Steve Allen and...
That's right.
Edie Gourmet? No.
Edie... God.
No, it's... Is it the...
Edie Adams.
Yeah, and so they were Edie Gourmet, they played his, and it was just, and they had such great little internal references that didn't throw you off, and it wasn't like a thing that would some shows you watch and you go there's just a joke I'm not getting here, now I'm on the outside. They never did that. It never had jokes that you had to if you didn't get the joke, it just went right over your head. It wasn't like a thing that detracted from you didn't feel like they were deliberately winking at some hipster 1% of the audience or something.
Also, they made you believe that Stephen First and Howie Mandel might be doctors.
Yeah, which is awesome. And then, goddamn! And then there was, they at one point had a sequence where Mark Gregg, William Daniels, the voice of Kit, is he's sitting there at home and he's watching TV with his wife, Hot Bonnie Bartlett, and he's saying, "Ellen, there's a guy on the TV and he's blowing up a rubber surgical glove on his head. Is that what passes for comedy now? That's crap." And then he just turned it off. Which is great because, that was Howie Mandel's whole shtick for the longest time, is he would blow up a surgical glove on his head. And so the idea that the show itself just called him out as just being terrible was sort of awesome. Howie Mandel played Dr. Wayne Fiscus. This is the final thing I'm going to do here. Dr. Wayne Fiscus, his ATM pin, anyone? Anyone? Number 9. Hey, here's the thing that makes me look relatively cool by comparison. And I know that that's a tall order. That's not a thing that just, you don't really think of that as being a thing that, that can be done, you know, by anyone, because, you know, I mean, just look at me. I'm not that cool. If you were to let's say compare me to like Seamus, who at the mention of Frank Black actually just started typing verbatim Frank Black quotes from Millennium into the text box. I give you, for example,
Seamus's brain is a strange and fascinating labyrinth, isn't it?
I become capability. I become the horror. Who knows what could become only in our hearts of darkness? It's my gift. It's my curse. Once again, Frank Black from Millennium. It is prophecy that when the end comes, it will come into darkness. A catastrophe all foresaw, but few believed. Most of us will battle too late against the chaos, but not the few. The radical few, who obey no discipline. Unencumbered by conscience, they prepare, ruthlessly pursuing their own preservation. If they survive, the rest of us perish. So, wow. There you go.
I'd like to something about St. Elsewhere while we were talking about that. I only remember one of those television in-jokes from St. Elsewhere, but it was so funny, it just stayed in my head, like, forever. There was an episode where a patient was played by Jack Roiley, who was a regular on the Bob Newhart show. He was...
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And he made a mention in passing that... That his mental health was poor because he'd been screwed up by some quack psychiatrist in Chicago.
Oh, that's awesome. That's fantastic. They also made many, many MASH references in that show. Also, occasionally, if you listen to the background, paging Dr. Blair, Dr. You know, whatever. If you listen to St. Elsewhere, as I know you do all the time, if you listen really closely to the overhead announcements in the background, you will hear them paging, because one of the head writers and producers on St. Elsewhere, Bruce Paltrow, you will hear them paging Gwyneth Paltrow, because she was like 9 years old when that show was on the air, and so he inserted Gwyneth, and it was like, aww. Paging Gwyneth Paltrow. You'll hear that all the time in the background. I have no life. None. Zero. All right. And then Dr. Roxanne Turner. Played by Alfre Woodard, made an appearance on, a couple of appearances on Homicide. So, still looking hot, by the way. Let me just tell you. Playing Dr. Roxanne Turner.
So, therefore, Homicide also doesn't actually exist. Never happened.
And it's people forget that Denzel Washington started out as him elsewhere.
He did indeed.
Where Denzel Washington and Roxanne Turner were humping it out.
Because that was the days on television that it was like awesome and racy and edgy to have black characters, but you couldn't have them date white people.
Well, no, Don. I mean, come on. We're not savages. all right, you are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. This is the opening I should have done like an hour ago. Today we got your Democracy in the March Taser Watch. By the way, we'd like to welcome any and all new Legion of News listeners who have just joined us for this program. You know how structured that show is and how most of the time people occasionally would say, hey, Legion of News show, you guys are just all over the place there. You have no idea. We've been lowballing it. Democracy in the March, Taser Watch.
Who says we're all over the place? I think we do a fine job of news and commentary.
I have looked into the void. I have looked into the beast. When you look into the beast also looks into you. Anyway, we also got the top five coming up today. The top five songs that I was subjected to by my parents growing up as a Ute in Kennewick. Let's see, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette. We're going to be calling in here in just a few. And let's see. So we got Democracy in the March, Stage Watch, top five, Aaron Mesh. Don Taylor's working on the following headlines for you on this Wednesday.
7 million candles are recalled because of fire hazard. 5 people are attacked by a rabid fox. And Colton 45 is debuting a fruity new beverage.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Just in time for summer.
Lando. All right, excellent. Let's see, just these 3 comments here. By the way, this is before I said a thing about it. Somebody, listener Rick says, hey, my favorite St. Elsewhere episode is that one where Mark Harmon got his face sliced by a coked-out hussy. Yeah, I forgot about that. He was doing... Oh, God, why did you have to just type that on the screen, you bastard? Oh, you bastard. If I could kill you through the screen right now, I would. So he just... There's no pretty way to get into this. So the other day I was talking to Greg and Sarah. I don't think you... Were you around for this? I was talking to Greg and Sarah about... about the concept of developmentally delayed folks having sex.
No, I somehow missed that.
Yeah, you're poorer for it.
Well, you know something? I think I came in for the tail end of that because that explains some of the things I heard you guys saying in the retard voice.
Well, it wasn't me because I can't do a retard voice.
Okay.
If I could, I would. But no, Greg and Sarah.
I just decided to ignore it and do my work and not even ask.
Maybe somebody been in a car crash on the way to work that day. You didn't want to point it out, Sarah. You sound a little strange. They both do a sort of a quirky voice, but they were discussing that episode of what is it, Life Goes On, where Corky ends up, he ends up getting it on, you know, what did James Brown say? Doing it, you know, what does he say at the beginning? Is it Get Up, I Feel Like a Sex Machine? Where he's doing that whole rap to the people and he's like, you know, I'm going to talk about the sex machine, you know, getting down, doing it, you know? But where there's this episode where Corky like gets it on with like some other retarded girl,
I remember that.
Anyway, how awkward that is, and so that led to this whole discussion about like if you're just a retarded person in the real world, like are there? I'm not saying like aren't there laws about like there ought to be a law, but I mean literally like is that a thing that you are? Like, can you just have the sex, or is it considered like rape or something if you have sex with a person who is not retarded? But if you have sex with another person who has that handicap, is it like two minors having sex suddenly not illegal? And I actually find that that's sort of interesting. I'd never really thought about that.
Yeah.
Because it's like if you're just some guy and you're going and getting it on with some, you know. What do you mean?
Think about that.
Well, because you know.
Before now.
But anyway, so before the Life Goes On even aired, listener Rick notes this, and this is exactly what I brought up to Greg and Sarah. He says, do you remember that episode of St. Elsewhere where the mentally retarded kids got caught knocking boots and they described it as saying, it felt like a circus? Yes. I do remember that. Because they were like in the same room together so they wouldn't freak out the other patients, presumably. And they, you know, they're like teenagers doing what teenagers do. And they're like making out and engaging in heavy petting. And then the last horrifying statement that the male patient says to the female before they cut away mercifully to commercial, leaving you just to ponder, like, the horror of the whole thing. The male patient says, let's take off our clothes and touch. And then they just go to commercial. It's so bad. Even if I was a kid, I was just watching this going, why? Why?
There was an episode of Family Guy where the son character, Chris, is dating a girl with Down syndrome.
Yeah, I remember that.
And there's this scene where Brian is getting him ready for his big date and dressing him up and singing a song about getting ready for your Down syndrome girl. And it is one of those things that Family Guy is very good at, of just, it's so funny, you can't help yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're just filled with self-loathing.
You feel bad.
Because you're laughing at it.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, God, I'm a terrible person, but my God, this is funny.
It really is. It really is true. Let's see. Oh, by the way, somebody says, the reason they made all those TV references is because the autistic kid would have heard all of those names and woven them into his fever dream. That's interesting. I'd actually never thought about that.
Hmm.
Like if something, you know, you hear something when you're asleep sometime and it makes its way into your dreams. If that was on the background of the house or whatever, he would have constructed his world from the things around him, like stuff he heard on TV. I'd actually never thought about that. That's it. That is really interesting. By the way, Jesus in the OC says, he says, Rick, do I get any brownie points for knowing that the music you were just talking over is from Glenn Danzig's solo album? Yes, you do. Well done, sir. Especially because I believe it's out of print. So
wow.
There you go. That is from Glenn Danzig's masterwork, Black Aria. So, all right.
Oh, thank you for returning my books, by the way.
Yes.
I had missed my Muter Museum coffee table book of freakish delights. So I completely forgot you had that, by the way.
No, I'm really good at
it out.
I'm good at returning books. I'm sorry, I was distracted by Keelan, who said that apparently Sarah described the men in that scenario as being a mind of a child, the penis of a man. That's so awful.
Which
See?
Is kind of the reverse of my crush on Peter Dinklage.
Yes, well, that's true. You said that, not me. Is he a midget or a dwarf?
He's a dwarf.
He is proportional? No, he's disproportional.
He's disproportional. He has the head of a man and the body of a dwarf, I guess.
You're guessing. You're just speculating. You know, we don't
know. Well, I've seen his body. I haven't seen that particular part of it, but I've seen his body.
You lent me the two books. One is about Elements of Style by Strunk and White, and the other is the Neuter Museum, which is one of those like creepy psych places that's been turned into a whole thing. I try to be really good about returning books.
It's the museum for the Philadelphia Physician of College of Physicians and Surgeons. So it's all like medically fascinating stuff that they have on display. But you know, if you're really into it's creepy medically interesting stuff.
All right. Well, let me see here. Hold on, let me stop for a second. I'm trying to figure out what we have time to do here and what we don't, only because... Why did I write down the word office?
No idea.
I have no idea why I wrote that down. Well, in any event, so I'm trying to figure out if we have time to actually discuss the... and by the way, yes, due to popular request, I will play the Down Syndrome date song into the next break. I'm trying to figure out if we have time to actually have a discussion about something before Aaron Mesh calls. Well, let me just say this. Here's why I wrote down office. This is not interesting to anybody, but here's that we... Sometimes it's like, how did you spend your night last night? For example, like this. Like a... No. So, Don, how did you spend your night last night?
Well, I was a little ashamed to say this earlier, but
did you lie to me earlier when I asked you, and you go, I just read a Chelsea Kane novel?
Well, the thing is, no, I did not lie. I just omitted a bit. Yes, I'm reading the latest Chelsea Kane novel. Also, I have to admit that I was, like, kind of excited by the fact that the freaking CW finally came back with new episodes of Hellcats,
baby.
Hellcats and Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
And normally I will watch it the next morning while I'm getting ready for work so that I don't have to subject Patrick to it. But there was nothing else, like, opposite it that was new and worth watching in real time. So I said, I'm watching Hellcats.
Excellent.
And kind of like, you can eat it.
I appreciate your support.
And so he just sat there and like read a book and sighed a lot while I watched. And this episode of Hellcats, by the way, the character whose name I cannot ever remember, the hunky guy who used to be, who's like Marty's best friend but is dating Savannah, he wants to get into film school. So he used the cheerleading squad to make his application film for film school. And so he did a zombie movie with all of the cheerleaders.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the whole last 10 minutes of the film practically is this zombie movie with that's a sort of a zombie movie slash trailer for a movie called Fear Town. Because, you know, the place where they all live is called Cheer Town.
And the cheerleaders, now it's not like a choreographed thing. It's like a trailer, not so much like a thriller thing.
Right. No, okay. Yeah. And so
they're
like,
not doing like a Glee thing or something to it, but like with choreography.
No. Okay. No, but it's like cheerleaders getting, the main cheerleader, Marty, getting Allie Bunkata, Hugata Bitch, whatever her last name is, getting disemboweled. And then all the zombies come and they're in the gym. And then... Savannah, the main cheerleader, she says, they're like, what'll we do? We're trapped. We don't have any weapons. She goes, not quite. And she reaches up and she flips back this like plaque on the wall and hits a giant red button. And the cheerleading trophy case like goes up into the ceiling and there's just a wall of guns.
That's awesome.
And she says, my family voted Republican in the last 15 elections.
Okay,
And then they go crazy on the zombies with the one guy has a cheerleader megaphone and it's like it's a flamethrower. And they go after the zombies, and it's actually kind of awesome.
Okay, so I wonder if this is a device that they have to keep. That's a great device to have around because it lets you use any insane idea that you come up with. That's wonderful. I watched it last season, and then I just sort of drifted away. It's just too much to watch. I wasn't able to keep up with it. I will watch it just for that. Excellent. Why would you have been ashamed to mention that to me earlier?
Because it's just so girly and so trashy that I watch Gossip Girl and Hellcats.
Because it's not tawdry to be sitting at home reading a serial killer novel. I mean, nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying tawdry is tawdry.
I tend to eschew most things that are sort of, you know, chick-based. Chick-lit and girly TV shows, and yet for some reason
Hellcats is for all people.
But Hellcats and Gossip Girl, I just can't keep away from.
That's okay. You know, can I just tell you? See, everybody, wait. Hellcats is awesome, says Jesus in the OC. Can I just? Well, this is like last night. So Lara finally finished her chick-lit book, which I don't know if I mentioned this. I swear to God, the front cover is just a big ice cream sundae, and it's, you know, I don't even know what it's called. You know, it's called, you know, Meet Cute Hump. break up together, whatever, something. Sisters. But on the front is like a huge ice cream thing with like two spoons in it. And it's like, and she, it was that thing where like, even as she was reading it, it was, you know, it was like those moments when like, not that anybody we know ever did this, but it was like those moments when like, I don't know, when you're like 19 or something, and maybe it's just you're lazy or just, you know, dumb or just stoned or something, and you're sitting there just eating like cookie dough out of the tube, like the Keebler tube that you get at the supermarket, and you're just going, oh, it's so good. And so she's reading this chick lit book for the last like week or so, and just ashamed of her. So she finishes the last, and literally she just throws it across the room. It's like, I'm done. Yeah, just throw it. And I think she actually went out and she put it on the free pile in front of our house, like a take if want post-it note or something on it. Now she's reading The Book Thief just to scrub it out of her head, but she was just so filled with embarrassment over the fact that she spent the last week of her life reading this like 300-page chick-lit thing. That in the back, and I read a little bit of it, and I swear, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, it's not like everything has to be, you know, not everything has to be, you know, everything, it doesn't have to be Dickens or whatever. It's not like you have to read, I'm going to sit and read Beowulf on the original scrolls, you know, you can just read stuff for fun, but I mean, sometimes there's writing that is just, you know, just bad. Yeah. And she's reading it, and at the back they had to add the stones to put one of those, like, study guides, you know, for, like, for what class, I can't even imagine.
For when you get together with your book club and you want to discuss the novel you've just read.
For your book club and sisters.
I've actually done that with two books in my life. I've actually just reached a point where I threw them across the room. One, I got all the way to the end of. And it was, I can't remember the title of it, but it was called Son of Rosemary. And it was a sequel to Rosemary's Baby that Ira Levin wrote like 25 years later. And it turned out that everything that happened in both the first book and in that book, it was sort of the Omen book where she saw her son, Rosemary's Baby, grow up and then become a politician, and he's the Antichrist and blah, 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 because he's the son of the devil. And it turns out all of it was just a dream.
Oh, God.
And I literally just threw the book across the room at that point and screamed out loud. Even after I'm proud of myself. I made it all the way through to the end of that book, even though it was one of those books, I kept reading passages out loud to tell Patrick how bad the book was. There was one passage in particular where she was at a Christmas party and she went to get herself a cup of eggnog out of the big sterling silver party punch bowl. And it described her, it said, she silver ladled the creamy cream.
That's awesome.
So I'm like, wow, Ira Levin is senile. That's awesome. The other book I threw across the room, and I never even
You're sure he wasn't just talking in hip-hop slang?
She silver ladled the creamy cream.
Like maybe Flavor Flav was his co-author or something there?
The other book was The Firm.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a terrible book.
I got about a third of the way through it, and I physically just threw it across the room in the general direction of the trash can. I didn't even want to give it away. I just wanted to throw it directly into the trash.
The Firm is a bad book, and I don't begrudge John Grisham his success. It's a tough racket. Have at it. It's just, but it's, let's not you and I confuse it with quality writing. It's bad. Even Stephen King, who is the big defender of guys like John Grisham, says, what does it go? It does clank pretty steadily in the last third.
No, it's Dan Brown bad.
Oh, but that was going to be my example, was the Da Vinci Code, which made me feel like my brain was going to vomit.
Both Angels and Demons and the Da Vinci Code are books. If you just don't, for God's sake, don't ever buy them or even check them out of the library, but go online, go to Amazon where it says, check this out.
Yeah.
And just read a sample page of a Dan Brown book, and you will be appalled at how bad the writing
is. It's astoundingly bad. It's painfully bad. And I don't... And look, and you you know me. I am...
Like Stephanie Meyer looked like a genius.
That's the thing. I have pretty mainstream taste in terms of most things. I mean, you know, books, music, television, you know, and we'll be joined by Mr. Aaron Mesher in just a moment. I have really mainstream taste. Now, it's not the only stuff I read or watch or listen to, but I don't fault something for being popular or for being, you know, for being best-selling or for, you know, some band who sells 9 million copies. I mean, you know, good, bad, whatever. You know, it's a crapshoot kind of wherever.
Well, there are good bestsellers.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, there's popular fiction that is quite good.
Yeah.
Dan Brown is just bad writing is just bad writing.
Yeah.
And that Da Vinci Code thing is just terrible. And I'd say that if it sold 5 copies or 50 billion copies or whatever, it's just terrible. It's so badly written. It's astoundingly badly written.
Yeah. And I mean, those books are so bad that if you see the movies, which are written by Akiva Goldsmith, who's a terrible screenwriter.
There's such a vast improvement, though.
And Ron Howard, who is a very workmanlike, very pedestrian director. And yeah, the movies are infinitely better than the books.
It scores over the books in every conceivable way. But that's not really, again, because Ron Howard is such an innovative director or because those movies are so well done. It's because the books set the bar so freaking low. Well, that's my thing with Twilight, too, is like, you know, watching New Moon or something and thinking, well, I guess this is okay, because I'm thinking
better than the book.
Terrible those books are. I mean, it's just, you know, and look, and you're talking, I mean, it's like, you were listening to a man who read everything that Eric Segal ever wrote, okay? Everything. Even Oliver's Story. You know, I read all of them. You were listening to a man who has read not one, not two. I have read probably close to double digits of Sidney Sheldon novels, all right? I know from bad writing, but it's like Stephanie Meyer and Dan Brown are just... And the thing about... I can't figure out, though, for the life of me, and then we'll get to Aaron Mesh in like 5 seconds. I can't figure out for the life of me. It must just be the so-called hidden history, the conspiracy thing. That's got to be the only engine that powers the Dan Brown sales, because at least you got hot vampire sex or whatever, and that's a universal thing with Stephanie Meyer. I don't get the deal of the Da Vinci Code. I don't.
Yeah, I actually tried to read Angels and Demons first, which was the book that came before the Da Vinci Code, or it came after. It was the sequel to it, although I think they made it a prequel in the movie. One thing, it was a prequel, and then they made it a sequel for the movie. So I read it before the Da Vinci Code came out, and I couldn't get through it. And the thing is, I'm a huge conspiracy nut. I've read a whole lot of books, like nonfiction books about the Illuminati. I find that stuff all amazingly fascinating. And when I saw the premise of the book, I thought, this is awesome. This is so for me. And it was so bad.
Yeah.
So horribly bad. From page one, just bad, bad, bad writing.
I got it from the library, at least. That was the only consolation, is that it didn't cost me anything. It was just, So, so forth. We didn't get to anything there. Well, we did. Just nothing on the page. I'll read this one comment from the audience. Jesus Christ, it says. Today's show is the most frenetic ever. Quit opening the hyperlinks in your head, for crying out loud. I went to the copier and you were talking about Mark Harmon. I came back and it's all retard sex. We're going to put that in our sales kit.
Oh, I'm writing that down.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get to some other stuff here in a second. We'll get to we get the Taser Watch coming up. Top five coming up. Let's see, Democracy in the March and so forth. Without further ado, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program from Willamette Week, screen editor and stylish man of the world, our good friend Mr. Aaron Mesh. Hello. How are you on this Wednesday, sir?
I'm fine. What's wrong with retard sex?
No. Apparently, there's everything right about it. We were just.
I mean, why shouldn't they be happy?
No. It's here. To be fair, we're not passing judgment. To be this sprang from a conversation with Greg and Sarah. They were having on their show, and they asked. I think quite it makes a lot of sense to ask this, because I'd never wondered about it, but now I do. They said, so, like, obviously, you know, an adult can't have sex with a minor, because that's statutory rape. They said, well, what if it is someone who is developmentally delayed in some fashion, kicked in the head while shoeing a horse or something, and then you got a person who is not. So you got like the person with the normal brain, and then the person with a delayed brain. Is that illegal? Is it considered like a de facto taking advantage of somebody? And then what if it's just two people? You know, you get the two retarded people having sex. Does it cancel itself out? Like, two minors having sex is suddenly no longer a crime. And I swear, I tell you, I actually don't know, but I'm sort of really intrigued by the fact that I'm totally mystified. But I have no idea what the legality of that is. And then that led to this huge discussion about the depiction of sex between retarded people on various programs, including but not limited to St. Elsewhere.
Oh, and also The Other Sister.
The Other Sister for the win. Well done. Wait a minute.
So let me throw in another variant. What if it was a retarded person and a furry dressed as a rabbit, and then you could do the whole Of Mice and Men thing?
Wait a minute. Is it The Other Sister, or is it The Other Sister, and then the other one is riding the bus with my sister?
Right. The Other Sister is the one where Giovanni Ribisi has
sex on the bus.
No, there's no sex in the bus.
Okay, The Other Sister, Giovanna Ribisi and Juliette Lewis.
Yeah, Juliette Lewis.
And then riding the bus with my sister is Rosie O'Donnell.
The people in my office, by the way, cannot comprehend what I'm talking about right now.
That's
they can only hear one end. They can only hear one end of this, and there is like scads of laughter right now.
Well, because what possible explanation, I mean, could there be in their heads for why you're having this?
There isn't one. That's what's amazing about this.
Somebody just typed the worst phrase that I have ever seen in my entire life into the text box. I was talking about Riding the Bus with my sister, starring Rosie O'Donnell, and somebody just said, "Have you seen Rosie O'Donnell in Riding the Sibian? Die, 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 old and alone and covered in sores,
yeah,
you bastard."
No one needs that in their mind.
The Riding the Bus with my sister is great. There is, it's Rosie O'Donnell, and you know it must be one of those things that she produced, or that is like, or that she funded or wrote or something, because it's so bad that it has to have been like a passion project, because it bypassed everybody's internal radar for like, oh my God, this is an abysmally terrible film. They didn't notice how bad the movie was they were making, which is the first indication that it probably meant a lot to one of them. Like when somebody writes a song about, like, you know, one of their kids, or like, you know, a dead parent or a wife or something, and the song is terrible, and that's how you know that it really means a lot. Going into the break, I'll play this montage of Rosie O'Donnell screaming from Riding the Bus with My Sister. It's the most glorious thing ever. All right, we'll just take a moment here and gather our thoughts.
So we're playing that, and we're playing the Down Syndrome montage song from Family Guy.
Well, you can't do one without the other, Don. It's you know, it's like having bacon without eggs. How are you,
Aaron?
I feel like
we need to regroup somehow.
I have to plead total ignorance on this, that I actually don't know what is on the cover of or inside this week's Willamette. So I'm kind of working from the same place as much of the audience. I'm totally ignorant of it. What are you guys doing this week?
Food carts.
This is our
Eat Mobile issue. We have the Eat Mobile Festival coming up this weekend, which is our annual cart buffet. I don't know how you'd describe it as exactly. Just, you know, a massive spread of carts under a bridge.
I don't know, like 40 of them or something. How many of them all get together in one place?
How many of them do get all together in one place? I will turn the pages and I will figure this out. 40.
All right, so
someone's yelling at me across the room.
All right, it is 40, and
now that he's not talking about retard sex anymore, everyone gets serious in my office.
of all of the food carts that are going to be gathered together, is that like a lottery, or is it like, do people submit? I mean, like, is it random, or do they have to like fight for that? How do you pick from all of the hundreds to the 40?
Well, I think it's not entirely an editorial process. It has a lot to do with our marketing department. So
graft.
That side of it, I know less about. But we do have 100 carts we've reviewed in this issue, and that is entirely an editorial thing.
Do you have any particular favorites? Anything that leaps out at you as being awesome?
I think creme de la creme, the escargot cart over on the east side, makes an unbelievable French dip.
Now, is that – okay, so my wife and I were actually at that whole pod last weekend, and I saw that place from across the whatever. I was busy getting a sandwich and like one of those little pecan tarts, and I saw the creme de la creme place, and I guess I just assumed it was, I don't know, like ice cream or dessert or whatever, but is it like an escargot place?
Creme de la creme is a French gourmet bus. It is an old, I think, 69 bus that's been made into a little French restaurant, and they do serve escargot, which is fine. But what's really good there is their French dip and croque monsieur sandwiches are amazing.
Is it an escargot French dip, like it comes with snail jus?
No, they're separate items.
What is snail jus?
I see why that's funny. It'd be a little like slime dip.
Oh, I see.
Right.
All right. See, I don't. Escargot is one of those things that I don't have. It's not like I'm one of those, I'm not going to eat no snails or whatever. I don't think I've really ever been at a place. I don't think I've ever had the opportunity to eat escargot. It eluded me my whole life.
It's just a delivery system for butter and garlic.
Excellent. But I mean, it's not like because, you know, some of those things are really polarizing. You know, like calamari is a thing I've tried to like, and I just can't. I just can't get with that. Escargot, you always hear it as like one of those things that like you either love it or you hate it or whatever, like pate or something.
Yeah, it's pretty neutral, and it's swimming in butter and garlic, so it's just a reason to slurp down butter and garlic.
It really is the most American of foods, then, in some ways.
In some ways.
It's like a freedom slug.
Excellent.
I forget the name of the place that actually was across from it that has these little pecan tart things that Kelly had talked about, and I feel bad because it's the guy makes these really great sandwiches as well, but there's these tiny little miniature pies that are wonderful. I'm sorry, what else in terms of the food carts, is there anything else in particular people go there that they should be definitely trying if they have the chance?
Chili Inside, Chili Outside looks particularly good. That one was reviewed by a guy named Matt Corbett, who's a friend of mine. He says that the classic chili dog with green onions on top will complete you, which is to say it will form a beautiful cast of your colon.
That's fantastic. That's wonderful. I'm a huge fan. This is happening in one place, and I think the last time we were filling in for Bob Miller and KPAM, and I had to find a different way to say we tried to go that last time or a couple years ago, and it was right across the street from Dancing Bear, and I forget what that neighborhood is actually called or something.
That's Kenton, but it's not there.
Okay, it's not that's what somebody they're going. No, call it Kenton. Don't say Dancing Bear. where is it actually happening this year?
It's right off of Water Avenue under the which bridge is it under?
I know exactly what you're talking about. You're like on 3rd, and if you're driving,
So it's in Southeast. It's right under the Morrison Bridge. There will be 40 carts. Wet Hot Beef is there, and Pizza Continino, and Pyro Pizza, and Nuevo Mexico, and Happy Grillmore, and Garden State, and Euro Dish, and I can keep going like this, but why on God's earth would I?
Happy Grillmore. I mean, that's...
Happy Grillmore.
I shouldn't find stuff like that great, but I do, and it's like, then I just feel like an idiot.
Happy Grillmore, hopefully, it will be located next to Kim Jong Grillin.
Excellent.
Which does Korean.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Fantastic. So do people need to get like tickets in advance, or can they just like go there, or is it like a thing at the door? Do they pay the individual cart? Like, how does it work? What are the logistics of it?
You do need to. Well, actually, you know what? It is sold out.
Oh, never mind. So now we're just taunting people.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, wonderful. So there's going to be a thing that you probably won't get to go to, but listen to how awesome it is. I think the last time
we have teamed up with a website called Forktown to create eat mobile food cart tours this upcoming weekend.
Am I stoned? Everything is hilarious today. Forktown just sounds fantastic. I'm taking that girl to Forktown tonight. The reason I mention this is I don't want to just sort of dangle something in front of people and then yank it away and say, well, you can't go. But last year I went, 2 years ago I think it was, that my wife and I totally misjudged. We thought, well, I'm going to just show up and go. And I mean, it really is. It's a thing that, I mean, really people got to get there early and because it does, as you say, it sells out really, really quickly. Have you guys given any thought to just to rolling out, several of these over the course of, a period of time?
I haven't.
It's too busy thinking about a very special episode of Chips.
Exactly.
All right. Awesome.
The more serious answer is actually that was kind of the serious answer. I can't really speak for my bosses on that.
No, oh, do it. I mean, seriously, before they fill Hank Stern's job, just speak for him. You should just totally announce that you are going to speak for Hank Stern.
We filled Hank Stern's job, actually.
Oh. I'm sure he's glad to know that he was...
Brent Wolf from The Oregonian is now our news editor.
Was it a whole thing where he was just like standing in the doorway and shifting uncomfortably from foot to foot looking at his watch? Just pack faster.
He's working for The Oregonian, so he's been homeless for several years.
Zam. Excellent. This has been the best Aaron Mish segment ever. Seriously, no lie.
Thank you.
Right.
Even though I didn't get to touch his mustache.
Well, you can't give it to all you at once. You gotta work for it, Don. Okay. You don't climb Everest in a day. You know, I'm not gonna just drop you. You gotta ascend to to resting level one. Read them in print in the Willamette Week or online at wweek.com, Mr. Aaron Mish. Thank you, my friend. Have a fantabulous day.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
There you go. That's Aaron Mish, Green Editor Aaron Mish. All right. There we go. Done. Right. I'm going to close this because it's something with Seamus talking about having relations with retarded people. I think I'm done with that. All right.
What are your feelings about brunch?
Are you asking me on a date?
No. I'm just asking if you're somebody who enjoys brunch. And I'm not talking about like the
when you say brunch, do you mean specific foods?
Like going out getting up on a Sunday and saying, let's go have a lovely, delightful meal because it's Sunday.
I'm not trying to be difficult, but I mean, when you say, how do I feel about brunch? There's two ways. One is like, how do I feel about sleeping in and having breakfast later than I normally would? And I feel fine about that. The other is, how do I feel about like going to a place where brunch is like a specific thing with certain kinds of foods that are usually only served at brunch. And that I'm totally indifferent to.
Okay. I was sitting here. I got an email. I'm on the mailing list for Simpatica Dining Hall, which is over on Southeast Ash. And I've yet to have dinner there. They have two dinners a week, one on Friday night and one on Saturday night, and it's a prefix menu. It's usually about $40 a person plus your tip and your wine and stuff. But their food is amazing. They have, and on Sundays they serve brunch, and you can't make reservations. You have to actually just go and stand around and wait for a table. But I just thought I would suggest that to you and your lovely wife, because the food is just really insanely delicious, and it's like about. It'll run you about $11-$12 for brunch. It's really affordable as
See,
well.
And that's one of those. It's not like, again, not like I have anything. I have no opposition to that. But it's just, to me, I think it's like that is more. It requires more work and it's more structure than I really.
That's why I was asking. I thought, you know,
I am very, like, because the food is very sort of utilitarian where I'm concerned. You know, it's in my view. It's like I just, you know, I just, as Ryan White would say, just unthaw something. And I just, food, as Ricky Roma says in Glengarry Glen Ross, said, you know, said, great meals fade in reflection and everything else gains. And that is because it's just stuff you put in you so you don't fall over. Mm. I mean, that's my thing. It's just you put in to keep, for me anyway, it's just a thing you put in to keep going. Like, to me, like the whole, that actually just, to me, the whole thought of doing a thing like that, and I know a lot of people who do stuff like that, but the idea of an event like that actually sort of makes me feel sort of tired and stressed out. You know, because it seems like a whole thing that it's going to take a lot of work and planning. And also, maybe this is just me. I rebel a little bit at the idea of a menu that is completely beyond my ability to adjust.
Oh, well, no, the brunch, they don't do that. The brunch, they actually have a full menu. And I've
so it's not like a locked thing. This is the other thing you're talking
about.
And
I've had a couple of just amazing things there. I had a hash that had like corned beef and portobello mushrooms and potatoes and things in it once. Another time I had just the most amazing bacon I have ever had in my life. It was from some special artisan local pig or something, but it was honest to God, it was like the bacon, the king of all bacons I have ever eaten in my entire life. And I had like this great like waffle with it that had some kind of homemade like rhubarb Marionberry syrup or something like that on it. And their brunch food is just really amazing. But yeah, they have a menu you can choose from.
I guess my experiences with brunch, maybe I'm sort of not jaundiced, tainted, something like that. Maybe the whole thing is a little bit tainted for me because my experiences with that, like when I was, you know, like when I was younger, I had these horrible like food service jobs and restaurants where it's like you're working the brunch shift. And it was always the thing of like, brunch to me was sort of like, it was like when you go to somebody's house that was like just a total, you know, that grew up as just a total rube, just a real tool user. And then they come into money and they decorate the house the way that they think rich folk ought to live. And so it's a lot of like the stuff we talk about, like, you know, where it's like a woman with one breast exposed holding a jug of water on her head with like a lamp. And it's like brunch seemed to bring in that crowd. And it's because they'd be having, you know, like champagne or something at 11 a.m. because it's so decadent. And it's, you know, and it's like they were there under the impression that they were somehow living the life of kings.
Yeah, we at the hotel I worked at in Salem, we did brunch on Sunday. And it was a lot of that where it was like, you know, the massive things of like 7,000 pounds of scrambled eggs and the mass produced bacon and then like a whole salmon with crap. Decorating
it's like a Vegas
and a guy
buffet
carving something
right yeah. but with the illusion that you are somehow this like self-deception that you are somehow so maybe I have not had the right kind of brunch.
Yeah, and in those situations the food is almost always really mediocre.
Bourdain has that whole thing about he won't eat brunch because he's like, I know what goes into it. He's like, it's all the crap they couldn't sell the last couple of days, and they just scrape it into a pile and chop it up and grill it.
But the Simpatica, it's run by the same people who do who own Laurelhurst Meat Market. So all of their meats are like totally insane, mainly top of the line. And like I said, they do catering, and then they do these two evening meals per week and brunch. And that's the only service they do. And so it's really, really nice stuff.
You know what I've tried to go a couple times now is Tasty and Sons. But that's a place where it's like you got to basically just bring a tent and just live outside to be able to get yourself a slot because it's just so unbelievably crowded all the time.
Yeah, that's kind of become the thing at Simpatica because unless you have a party of eight or more, they don't take reservations for brunch. So they start brunch at 9 And if you're not there by like 9:30,
you're hosed.
You've got like a 40-minute wait just standing around waiting to get
in. Well, I should have a good brunch at some point then, because maybe I've just sort of, you know, that's the thing where I'm just kind of hating it because it's like the Fabergé egg crowd, you know, is always the ones who would come in to get that. So, you know, brunch munch. I mean, I can sort of, you know.
Well, maybe one morning I'll get Laura in cahoots and we'll make you wake up at like 9 a.m. to go have breakfast.
Because that's exactly what I want, is you and my wife in cahoots. That's how everything, that's the beginning of all good stories. Let's see. All right. Can you also skulk to do something?
And then we'll just start mainlining vodka and staying out together until 4 in the morning.
No, you have to get on. That's the thing you have to apparently get in line really early for. Her dance card is very full on that front, I think. All right. Can I just say, you know, I talked to her the other day. She was like out of town, and so she didn't hear the whole thing where I was talking about her falling down in the living room after having a drinking contest with Aaron Duran. And it's like, and Aaron's like, you know, well, she started it. She was taunting me and, you know, and leading me on and whatever, showing her ankles. And, you know, so we had to do the drinking contest. And so it's like, I turned to the phone and I barely just said Aaron. And she just like lit. She said, well, I heard you talked about the drinking contest. You know, what did you say? And I said, well, I just kind of laid out the broad strokes. And I said, Aaron did mention that you were sort of goading him into it. And then that was a terrible mistake, because then it was like 10 minutes of me just holding the phone away from her ear while she screamed at me about Aaron and how Aaron, what did she say? She said how Aaron used some – she didn't say Jedi, but she did say like Aaron used some mind trick to make her drink. And it's just like on and on and on. So really, I mean, if you're going to do that to somebody, you really had to go along on one of those nights so that you can be the impartial observer and come back and relay like the truth of how this actually happened. I promised Rosie O'Donnell also the Down Syndrome song from Family Guy. There's no real way to segue from those two things into what I was going to play in this break. So what I'll do is – we're going to do the Rosie O'Donnell thing, Family Guy thing. I'm so sorry about this. Then a Squire's Electric spot. I gotta put something there. Gotta be a buffer of some kind. Because I did some of this during the break between Legion of News and the Rick Emerson Show, and I'm gonna be doing it for the next couple of days because it's awesome. And because I didn't do it yesterday, because I myself am clearly not that bright. But I will be playing a cut, and then later on today, probably the second cut of two from the new Roger Klein album, which came out yesterday. So the new Roger Klein, which is awesome. So we'll play a little Roger Klein. Not now. We're going to play the retarded things, and then Squire's Electric, and then we'll do the Roger Klein song. There's a great song called, and I can't find the lyrics posted anywhere yet because the song just came out yesterday, and I'm trying to deduce the lyrics, trying to sort of, you know, do what they're about and try to figure them all out because some of them I'm catching, some I'm missing. I'm trying to figure out if it's a really, really good play on words, or if it's just sort of as it appears. It's one of those songs that it sounds like he's singing about a girl, but then you realize he's sort of singing about – it's a song about songs. It's a song about music. But the refrain is – the refrain has a line about it. He says, we're all over the radio. And I can't quite figure out if he's talking about how he and music are sort of – you know, it's one of those songs where it's like, you know, the music is his companion through life and whatever, kind of like that With David Bowie song by Veruca Salt. So it's like, you know, music is sort of his – you know, his one true companion as he travels, you know, the highways and byways of his existence, or if it is a song about a girl and it's like how he and the girl, you know, are bonded together through music, and that's the thing, that the, you know, they have the shared love of music and song, and so together every song they hear is sort of, you know, their song because blah blah blah, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Or the other thing I thought initially, that maybe it was like a play on words, in that because he's very much, you know, Roger Klein and the Peacemakers are very much an independent, you know, band, that they, you know, they own it all and they write it all and they finance it all and they fund all their own records and they fund all their own tours out of their pocket, and nobody plays them on the radio. I mean, not outside of Arizona. So I mean, if you don't live in New Mexico or Arizona, you're not hearing Roger Klein on the radio like anywhere. So I wondered if maybe the phrase "we're all over the radio" was sort of a pun, and it was sort of they have moved on from that because they are, you know, because they are very obviously very happy to exist in this level of big cult fandom that they have. So I don't know. So we'll play that here in a few. And I don't know. You can tell me what you think. So that's coming up here in, a few minutes. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't forget, coming up at 4 o'clock today at Cascadia.fm, Don Taylor doing another installment of Hamfisted Radio along with Bobby Fatboy Roberts. And you can hear that later at hamfistedradio.com as well. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Good morning! Daddy! We have to get a new toilet device, I broke!
Excellent.
There you are. You have to take me to Super Save tomorrow because I have a sale. You're the hippopotamus. Jesse's delicious. So you got to take me today to get a new toilet seat because mine got broken and was sliding. I would fall off of it, like, whoa! Can we have assistance, please, in row number one for toilet seats? Hello? Toilet seat assistance in row number one, thank you! Would you like a cookie? Chocolate flavor, very nutritious. Where's my daddy? Oh! I want to see you! Do you like marshmallows?
I love marshmallows.
Me too. Well, you'll have to excuse me because I have to use the bathroom. No matter where you go, if you try to run or hide or anything, a mole will always find you. It's always watching. Find the bus! Come on! Will Smith is very hot, too. If he was here right now, Rachel, do you know what I would do to him? Something's wrong! Rachel, something's wrong! Thank you!
Because
it's my birthday!
That's nice.
You're weird!
That's fine.
You've got to look your best tonight, you tubby little parasite, because there's a lovely lady and she's waiting for you. And though her pretty face may seem a special person's wettest dream, before you get to see it, there are things you must do. We'll try a tie and boutonniere of yellow or a rose that shows that you're a classy fellow with the posh panache of Jefferson at Monticello, busting out a mile with styles. I know you just can't wait to stare at all that luscious orange hair, but boy, before you touch a single curl, you must impress that ultra booming, all consuming, poorly grooming Down syndrome girl. On any normal day, you reek as if you're on a farting streak, your fingers up your nose, and you are dripping with drool. But if you want a lady's love, you're better off by smelling of a gentleman's cologne instead of sneakers and stool. A squirt, a spurt of something just for Ellen, and you'll see that she will find you so compelling. And she does, because the only smell that she'll be smelling won't be coming from your bum. You wanna take that little whore and spin her on the dancing floor, but boy, before you do a single twirl, you must impress that effervescing, self-possessing, no BSing Down syndrome girl. Her eyes are emerald portals to a secret land of love, and her smile is like the sweetest summer flower. Her kiss is so inviting, and her hugs are so delighting. And what makes them really nice is that they've got a little spice, because they're tighter than a vice, and they go on for an hour. We'll get you on that shorty bus, and then you're gonna take it for a whirl. Now go impress that super thrilling, wish fulfilling you who's spilling, ultra swinging, boner bringing, gaily singing, ding-a-linging, stupefying, fortifying, as of Monday, shoelace tying, stimulating, titillating, kitty cat impersonating, mega rocking, pillow talking, just a little crooked walking, poorly pouting, poopy sprouting, for some reason always shouting, fascinating, captivating, happiness and joy creating. Down syndrome girl.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Squire's Electric. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Taylor.
Oh, am I supposed to be doing the ad here?
Well, I thought if that's the sort of thing you're likely to fall for.
Are you mentally challenged?
No.
You shouldn't be doing your own electrical work.
No, bad. Okay, I chose poorly.
Get someone who can use a telephone to call Squire's Electric.
Ask an adult to call Squire's Electric for you. Get your parents' permission and then call Squire's Electric. Please don't. I regret all of this so deeply. I'm so sorry. I don't know what came over me just now. That was, I have brought shame on everyone. Everyone everywhere.
Do you have a retarded cousin who sticks her finger in light sockets?
No. Let me just say this. Really, I'll just say this, you know, in all seriousness. Joe Squire's been a listener for a long time, and yet still remains a business partner. You know, when we launched this version of the show, one of the very first advertisers continues to support this program and to make it possible for because we've got sort of the two different tracks run. You know, we have the listeners who, of course, kick into 32 cent a day, and for which we are very grateful. And then we've got the Joe Squire's end of things and business partners who have lent their financial support and who have stood behind this program. Despite the fact that really we just abuse this technology in every just using it for just the worst, just really the vilest, most prurient kinds of horrible discourse, and yet every single day the listeners and Joe Squires and our business partners continue to be there.
Maybe it's like that thing where when you ride the bus or you have to do your laundry at the laundromat, it just makes you feel better about your own life. Maybe we're just so terrible.
Maybe it's not like those poor bastards.
Yeah.
I don't mention riding the bus. Unless you've seen... You haven't seen the riding the bus with my sister?
No, I haven't. I felt like I got enough entertainment just from seeing the commercials for it, really.
You've kind of heard all the money shots there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll just say that... it's like that thing you said one time. You said that in your experience, Dawn, that the people liked you a lot, and then they started to spend great amounts of time with you, and then there was sort of the return on investment started to falter a bit, and then they came to the conclusion they didn't really care for you much at all, and then they just flat out loathed you.
Yeah,
that typically is the dynamic with this show as well, with a great number of people, with a great swath of humanity.
Although, to be fair, though, we have a number of listeners who recently upgraded to yearly subscriptions. So obviously, there are some people who get a little taste of us and then go, you know, I'm sticking with this.
Well,
I want more.
And that's my thing. If you look at humanity as a whole, I would say that there's other folks, and then there's our folks. There's people, and then there's our people. So the listeners, business partners such as Squires Electric, who you can reach at 503-222-1609 or squireselectric.com, our people. This went so badly. It's gone so much worse than I ever imagined, really. Even putting the buffer between this and the two the songs with the whole thing.
That's
true. God, and that Family Guy song is fantastic, and it goes on for 3 minutes and 42 seconds. All right. Yep. 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 No, I've nothing else to add here. There's really nowhere else to. Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Lovers, fly down the freeways, glass. Anywhere the water falls, we'll be there too.
Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network.
Well, it used to be bad. I was born to lose, and my traveling shoes was the only shoes I had. Well, it used to be cool. I was that Sunday afternoon, sunk and drunk and stumbling through. Till I met your mama, she pulled me out of that terrible fix. Well, I know daddy's been away a while, cause it's been hard to teach an old dog new tricks. I tell your mama your dad done quit his drinking. Tell your mama your dad done found the Lord. Tell your mama your dad done quit his cousin, despite carrying on, but don't you tell your mama, goddamn, your daddy's born. Well, it used to be sly. I'd stay out all night, now I love to fight and make them young girls cry. Well, it used to be cruel. I was rude, shrewd, glued, screwed, tattooed, down and dirty with a just plain surly attitude. Till I met your mama, she pulled me out of that terrible fix. Well, I know daddy's been away a while, cause it's been hard to teach an old dog new tricks. I tell your mama your daddy done quit his drinking. Tell your mama your daddy done found the Lord. Tell your mama your daddy done quit his cousin, his fighting, his carrying on. But don't you tell your mama, goddamn, your daddy's bored. Well, if a thousand times I've seen the light, you know that I've gone blind a thousand times again. And if a thousand times I said I do, you know I turned my tail a thousand one again. I didn't mean no harm, I was just having fun again.
Uh-oh,
Emerson News Network.
The Rick Emerson radio program. So we had two Roger Klein songs back to back there. So the first one was All Over the Radio, which is the lead off track and I think first single. I don't even know when they say their first single, I don't even know what that means anymore. I was talking to the guys from Nickel Arcade about that a couple months back because they had the new record coming out. And he's like, well, our first single is whatever. But
yeah,
I mean, unless you're going to be, unless you are a band of sufficient size and whatever stature within the sort of mainstream industry, that you're going to be releasing a single to radio and they're going to play it. I wonder if that just means the first song that you're going to push, like, collectively across all of the, like, your Facebook and your whatever.
I would imagine so.
The first song you're trying to get everybody to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, in any event, it's called All Over the Radio. That is from Unida Cantina, which is the new album which just came out yesterday. And that was followed by Tell Your Mama. So there you go. It's, I'm sorry. I'm just all distracted by the, people are just sending me like lolcat sort of things, but it's all screen captures of Rosie O'Donnell going from riding the bus with my sister, like her just, and it was just like big, huge, manic, scary Rosie face. And then if somebody is just now, this is just cruel. Although I guess it's cruel to Rosie O'Donnell, so what do I care? So somebody has taken that final sequence in Cloverfield where the guy looks up and the monster's leaning down, going, and they've just put Rosie O'Donnell's face from riding the bus with my sister. No call for that, sir. Okay. Hello, Dawn Taylor.
Hi.
What were you just reading just now? You just said, recreate now, if you will, the moment that we just had.
Well, first what happened was I was looking at Twitter, and there was a posting from KGW, who I follow on Twitter, and they said, hey, we're not McDonald's, but we got like 6 job openings, and they just posted some job openings.
Because McDonald's did the thing where they were hiring,
right,
50,000 people or something.
Yeah, so I looked at those, and then it occurred to me that it's been a long time, you know, since I've looked for a job. And because I have one. And so I popped over to Craigslist just to see what's going on in the world of jobs on Craigslist. And I looked at part time because I always thought, you know, you never know. Somebody might have something where it says you only have to work like 3 hours a week and it'll pay you $1 zillion.
Do you know what a downline is?
Yeah. So then I found this job opening that says, do you consider yourself an outgoing individual? Do you love cheese?
Yes, I do.
Do you love farmers markets? This may be a wonderful position for you to apply for, then. There's no, there should be a comma after the four there. But anyway, we are looking for talented cheese selling individuals. No formal knowledge of cheese is required. Whom posses outgoing personalities.
I don't understand. Who posses? As in possess?
Whom posses outgoing personalities.
Whom posses.
High energy, responsible people and good drivers are what we're looking for. The right individual must like early mornings and be able to manage a till, load and drive a van, and keep track of inventory.
Are these three separate people when they say high energy individuals, something, and then talented drivers? Or is that all one person?
I think you have to have all of those skills.
So they're looking for someone with those three things. They're not looking for those three.
Yeah.
What do you do with this job?
Apparently you'll be doing sampling events at stores and going to farmers markets and wineries and festivals.
You're driving cheese to people.
And you're basically setting up a table and giving people cheese.
Does it really say, what is the opening line before do you like cheese?
Do you consider yourself an outgoing individual? Do you love cheese?
Jesus. Okay. All right. That's
and
fantastic.
Then it says, if you're interested in applying, please email the following. Please do not waste my time and skip any of these items. If you cannot follow instructions, then I do not want to hire you.
Okay. Does it look like it's a company or just some guy?
I thought it was a company until it got to that part, and now it just sounds like some guy.
And I have nothing against food carts, but is this sort of like what the food cart thing has wrought? That just, it's just a bunch of dudes You know, and it's like a guy basically like microwaving little smokies at home and then just taking them on a plate to a construction site and going, $5. Who's got $5?
This guy is making his own cheese in his basement and he just wants somebody to take it out places.
Oh, I need some basement cheese.
No, try Steve's basement cheese. It's delicious.
This is a cheese made.
Excuse me, sir. Would you like to try some basement cheese?
Cheese made in some Vietnamese family's bathtub.
The things that you're supposed to email, by the way, are one, resume/work history, make sure to include current contact information.
Because those are two different things, your resume and your work history.
Two, a picture to go along with your resume, ! Three, an explanation of what characteristics you possees that would benefit this position.
I don't think they can ask for a picture. I think that maybe they can, but I think asking for a picture might in fact be a violation of equal opportunity laws.
Well, I'm not even sure this person is selling legal cheese.
Well, somebody says that somebody says cheese is the code name of a drug. We're not saying that this person is selling drugs, but someone says cheese is the name of a drug. This sounds like it's a coded listing for mules. Would you let a mule crank in your anus?
Because everyone knows that's what you mean when we say drive a van and give out cheese samples.
We're really
saying put crank in your butt and drive it across the border.
I didn't mean to say anus just now, but it's like having gone 80% of the way, I couldn't pull back. You just had to do the entire thing. I just, you know, can I just tell you?
Which is worse, basement cheese or anus crank?
Is that like the Lady and the Tiger?
It is. If you had to ingest one of the following.
It's sort of like a double bill at the Hawthorne Theater opening for the Insane Clown Posse.
You have to pick one of the above. Toilet wine, basement cheese, or anus crank.
Are you ready to rock tonight? Toilet wine. I wish I had applause. I don't have any. Anus crank. Worst wrestling name ever. That's when you show up late to the Wu-Tang meeting and all the good names are taken and they go, you're anus crank.
Oh, that's the worst juggalo name ever.
I had to be anus crank last time. Sounds like a thing that Jim Willig would be selling during his day job. Jesus God. All right.
Yeah, if he was here right now, he'd be like, you know, we have something similar to that.
It's goddamn. But it looks like Jenna Hayes. You know,
but it's legal, so they call it bath salts.
I can't help it. I love the word mule as a verb. I don't know why. There's just something funny about muling drugs. Not smuggling or hiding or secreting them, you know, or muling drugs. All right. Have we gone to the news desk once?
Not at all.
Okay, let's just...
And now, from the news...
I'm sorry. I just have to read this. So apparently the show has been off all day at Cheryl's house because she was feeling a little under the weather.
That's how she clicks on it, just hears you go, anus!
Not me so much as she says... not that so much as she says, nice. My mom just sat down to listen to the show. And then she just types, anus crank? Really? This is what happens when you don't listen to the whole show, Cheryl. You're not there at the beginning to put us back on the path of righteousness. We can't.
We need you to keep us in line.
Seriously, because if you're not listening for like an hour, then it's like an hour. Then you know what it is? Then it's like we spend an hour swimming from shore.
Oh, by the way, another part-time job that's available. Dog daycare sanitation attendant.
Oh. No. Or you could just kill yourself.
Although I'll say, though, the hours work with my show here.
Excellent.
You know, Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., I could just leave here and then go hose down the doggy daycare every night.
Cheryl just typed, I'm going back to bed. Goodbye. Okay. Sorry.
Trying to hear what the primary duties are.
Yes. Yes.
Primary duties, end of day cleaning, mopping, disinfecting, and scrubbing of daycare and kennels, as well as general dog cleanup.
Oh. God damn. Sometimes sometimes you think that maybe you're like, I should have gone to college.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we have to make sure this show doesn't fail at any point, because clearly it's a world of ugliness out there.
Let's do our democracy on the march.
Let me just tell you this before we do that. I'm sorry. I'm losing my composure today.
And it's not even Thursday.
God damn. Maybe tomorrow will be like a really serious, thoughtful program like yesterday where we talk about, you know, like the we do good pressing sociological issues of our time. As opposed to today where Seamus says in all caps, "Oh my God, I just Google image searched anus crank." You don't even want to know what came up.
No, I don't.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
You have another show to do later on today.
I know.
That's awesome.
Democracy on the March.
All right. Here's your Democracy on the March for Wednesday right in the Rick Emerson radio program. Here's Dawn Taylor with your Democracy on the March.
Iowa Governor Terry Branstad signed 11 bills into law Tuesday, including legislation that would allow people who have been previously judged mentally deficient to carry a gun a process for getting a gun if their situation changes.
That's awesome.
Backers say Senate File 456 fixes an omission in the shall issue law approved last year. The legislation is designed to conform Iowa law with federal requirements that allow persons who were subject to disqualifying mental health disorders or judgments to regain their right to possess a firearm in a fair and impartial process.
This is called the shall versus may scenario, whether the law says you may issue a gun to someone or you shall issue a gun. Because one is at the state's discretion. The other is if you can X your way to the signature line on the form, they got to give you a gun.
Well, supporters say someone with a head injury who is assigned a conservator or guardian is generally prohibited from owning a gun. Without the changes in SF 456, that person would have no way to regain gun ownership rights once an injury had healed.
So this is what kind of healing when you're mentally deficient? What kind of injury are they talking about that just sort of goes away over time?
I guess.
Or that you get better?
I guess if you get bonked in the head and you can't take care of yourself and then.
And that day you'd been planning on buying a
right.
gun.
Right. Then you can't buy a gun.
But I need
then,
one now.
Then later you don't need a guardian anymore. And at that point you can say, ha-ha, I'm free. Now I'm getting me a gun.
Okay. It seems like that in and of itself, like, that might be reason enough to deny you the gun. If that's the first thing you do. Like, if you're just laying in a vegetative state and then you just, huzzah, you know, zoot allures, I can live and dance and breathe again. Like, give me a gun. You know, it seems like maybe that's a... Like, that's the whole thing with the waiting period. Like they, you know, talk about waiting period. Like, you know, it, like, how do we know you know, you shouldn't have a gun? Well, if you need a gun, like, right now, this instant, like, clearly you shouldn't have one.
Yeah, you're probably up to no good.
God damn.
Yeah.
All right. There's your Democracy on the March for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Okay, here's Dawn Taylor.
More than 7 million candles are being recalled because of concerns the cup holding the candle could melt or catch fire. The Consumer Product Safety Commission says the tea lights were sold under the Chesapeake Bay Candle and Modern Light brand names. They were sold at Home Goods, Target, Wegmans, and other stores nationwide between July 2009 and February 2011. The CPSC says the candles have a clear plastic cup that can melt or ignite, posing a fire and burn hazard. The importer, Pacific Trade International of Rockville, Maryland, has received one report of a plastic cup melting while in use. No injuries or property damage have been reported
so far.
Well, that's
like the thing every Halloween where there's like all throughout the country, people just line the sidewalks of their homes with candles in paper bags that are all right next to like the garden, which is full of bark chips, and the lawn, which hasn't been watered for like a month and a half. Or when I was having a first communion and a first confession as a wee child in the Catholic Church, and they would give you like a candle in like an uncoated Dixie cup. Like, I don't know what that was all about. I mean, it's, you know, and of course, and, you know, as an altar boy, you're kind of carrying one of those. You get these big sleeves. It's like the whole thing is just designed to turn you into the human torch, like right there in the middle of church. It was
well, they used
very
to do
weird.
That at when there would be vigils. candlelight vigils, and people would just have the homemade thing where they got the candle, and then it's got like a Dixie cup around it or something like that. And then I think somebody said, you know, there's some money to be made here in the vigil market. And they started actually making these sort of little don't drip on your hand candle guards that they sell to people.
It's like a disc.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just goes there.
So someone said, there seems to be a need for these since there are so many vigils.
I think that might have happened because somebody said, hey, you know, there's money to be made in the class action lawsuit market. Steve, look over there. You know, and then it was a whole lot of they gave us the candles. All right.
Opponents of plans to build a mosque in a southern Belgian city buried the head of a pig under a Christian cross bearing the inscription, Here Lies Muhammad. Xavier Godefroy, an official with the mayor's office in Charleroi, said Tuesday that the protesters' actions were, quote, unacceptable, intolerable, and disrespectful, adding that police had opened an investigation. The pig's snout was still sticking out of the ground when the decapitated animal, which practicing Muslims will not eat and therefore represents a major insult, was found. Charleroi Mayor Jean-Jacques Visseur told a news conference that faced with such a, quote, stupid gesture, we are all Muslims now.
It doesn't, really?
That's what he said. Said, okay,
so that really boomeranged in an unexpected way?
It probably is more powerful in French. Or Belgian, or whatever he speaks.
So wait, this was in Belgium. You don't really think of the Belgian people as being, like, angry about anything at all.
No, but in this case, it's like, well, they're going to build a mosque, and a bunch of idiots there, as here, went, oh, those brown people are bad. So
is that your Belgian accent?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Say this, say, Zutelors, I have missed one.
Zutelors.
Yeah.
The brown people, we hate them.
That's not us actually saying that. No. That's Don's French person who's in Belgium.
No, that's my Belgium voice.
But so then the guy says, well, in response to this, now we're all Muslims. That's sort of a great scorched earth policy in return. Like, well, I'll show you. Zing, we're all Muslims now. So I bet they didn't. That is an outcome they probably did not anticipate.
Right.
Okay. Well, there you go. Okay,
Here's a wonderful story. I've been looking forward to reading this one all day. A swarm of bees attacked an elderly couple at their South Texas ranch, killing both of them and injuring their son.
For the love of God.
William T. Steele, 90, was spraying insecticide to kill bees that had built a hive in his fireplace when they attacked him, his 92-year-old wife, Myrtle Steele, and their son, Richard Steele. Richard Steele's wife, Judy Steele, told the Valley Morning Star of Harlingen, Texas, that her father-in-law was pronounced dead at the scene and his wife had been stung over 300 times. She said her mother-in-law was airlifted to a Corpus Christi hospital about 100 miles away, where she died yesterday.
Why in the name of, I mean, as somebody said, that, you know, that is really just bee self-defense. I mean, and they're old, but I mean, the kid was there, right? How old could he possibly
be? Well, he's 67.
Oh, well, okay, but even so, 67, you have most of your marbles. You have maybe an abundance of marbles.
Well, that's the thing is, I guess he was there to try and help.
No, but the help is like, Dad, no. The help is ixnay on the A-spray.
Yeah, the wife of the 67-year-old son said, my husband feels terrible. He feels that he didn't do enough to help his parents. We thank the good Lord that they died together.
Okay. I guess they skipped right past the they didn't suffer part. They couldn't check that box. But I mean, I think the help is like when you say, where are you going with that can, Dad? I'm going to go spray these 9 million bees that are all living in the fireplace.
Yeah, help is when you say, here, Dad, let me kick in $100 to hire a professional to come do that for you.
Dad, why don't you and Mom go to the movies for a while, okay? That's a good lad. Yeah. Okay, I'll take care of this.
How about you're 90 years old, you shouldn't be, like, spraying the beehive with insecticide.
As Keelan notes, Jesus Christ, people will thank God for anything. I mean, really, that is seeing the glasses half full. You have to give him that.
Well, if one of them was going to be stung to death by bees, I'm just grateful both of them were.
You know, if you're gonna die horribly covered in insects, this is really the way you want to do that.
You want your spouse to die that way too at the same time.
I mean, that really is like the quintessentially Christian attitude. That like, why just have one awful, horrible, skin-crawlingly icky death when you can have two? Two better than one.
Well, I know many's the time I have said to Patrick, you know, honey, if I'm ever stung to death by bees, I pray to God that you are there
I want
being
you there
stung to death by bees as well.
All right. And, I mean, and the guy does manage actually to come off as kind of a douche, even though his name is Richard Steele. So,
yeah.
All right. Anyway, so plus the bees, it's not like they're outside, like they're in a tree or so. You spray them and they're going to go, well, I guess we'll go over there
instead.
Well,
I think this was the outside of, it was outside, but it was like the fireplace, but it was outside. It was somehow, I think they were outside in the patio. They were like sort of in the brickwork, I think, of the outside portion
so
of the fireplace.
So was the chimney?
I guess, yeah.
Because I was picturing sort of the birds kind of a thing, where they're in the house.
Well, the chimney is up higher. The fireplace is the lower portion.
Well, I understand that a chimney is above. I know where the chimney is.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Well, the story said fireplace, so.
No, well, that's why I was asking if it was in the house. In other words, is it like, or over the winter, the bees built a hive inside the fireplace, which is not like out of the question.
Yeah.
And so the old guy who, I mean, clearly didn't really think through the A to Z of this. So if you can assume that it maybe wasn't the brightest move, as I think the results have borne out, to go just to go all Agent Orange on the bees, maybe you can make the additional leap to say that he might have been standing in the house where the bees were like in the sort of fireplace and said, you know, this is a fine place from which to do it. Hold on a second, honey, hold the cap. So
it may have been one of those things that perhaps because of the way they were building their hive, if it was there was a lot of it was inside the fireplace, maybe the old man did not know exactly how many bees there were.
Oh, that would be unnerving if you just thought there were like two or three and then unbeknownst to you, there's like 7 jillion of them up inside.
Yeah, because that can be. Patrick worked for a year for Terminix and he has stories about exterminating things. But he had a couple of instances where he'd get called out to somebody's barn in Beaverton or something and they go, I think I got me a problem with wasps. You know, and he'd go out into their barn and there would be like this wasp nest, like the size
of a van,
like up in the corner of the thing. And he'd go, yeah, it sure looks that way. I'll be back in the morning when it's cold and they're sleeping.
Yeah, we're going to nuke that from orbit.
Yeah.
It's okay with you. Have you seen that picture of the abandoned Volkswagen that's just like the inside is filled
yes.
with a wasp nest?
You
don't want that. So, no, I... Yeah, no, just you know, sometimes it's best just to let, you know, it's like how you got to let the Wookiee win sometimes. Sometimes you let nature win. You find a new house.
Yeah, right. Or you hire somebody who actually knows what they're doing.
Yeah, or you get a guy who, this
again,
is like
it brings us back
Squire's
to the Squire's
Electric
thing. You hire someone who knows what they're doing so you're not killed.
I mean, this is America. Why should you risk your ass? I mean, that's for other people in lesser nations. You're Stone Taylor.
All right. Colt 45.
The show is exhausting today. I'm just worn out. I'm glad I don't have to go to another show after this.
No, that would be oh.
No, I'm just saying. I don't think I would be able to. That's a pain I could not play through.
Well, you're not strong like me.
No, it's true.
Strong like bull. Colt 45's new blast beverage comes in fruity flavors and boasts twice the alcohol of Pabst Brewing Company's original malt liquor.
Woo!
Jorge Castillo with alcohol industry watchdog group Marin Institute says the product and its marketing are encouraging kids to drink.
They are targeting young people, mostly because the way they're packaged, they're in bright colors, attractive colors to young people, teenagers.
Yeah, so they're targeting children and magpies,
and
apparently.
They taste like fruit punch, like soda. And
I don't really think – here's the genius thing about selling alcohol is you don't have to target kids. You can actually target adults, and the kids just sort of come along naturally. You don't – it's like saying you have to target crack at people.
No, but it is easier. I mean, the thing is when you're young and you're first starting out drinking, you like things that are easy to drink and are tasty.
Yes, but –
You're not having a glass of scotch.
But it's what you just said, though. You would not even know that if you were not already of the mind that, like, I'm going to do some drinking. You know, even though you're 12 or something. I mean, you've already, in other words, for them to get to the point of like, ooh, this is wonderful, you have already made the decision that like, what shall I do this morning? Shall I get a merit badge? Shall I help an elderly neighbor? No, I will drink. So, I mean, you know, if you've already decided to sauce up at the age of 13, it seems like that is, now it's just a question of what will you be abusing?
Well, apparently it's also been endorsed by Snoop Dogg.
That's great.
It has 12% alcohol. The can, it's 23-ounce cans. So keep that in mind. 12% alcohol, 23-ounce cans.
So that is it's like 2.6 ounces of pure alcohol.
Well, I mean, that day that Sarah and I were sitting here and we both got hammered, I had a 20-ounce beer that was 10% alcohol, and I was pretty looped. I mean, and also it comes in four flavors: strawberry lemonade, blueberry pomegranate,
wonderful,
grape, and raspberry watermelon.
Let's see. I'm trying to find a well, you lived in Los Angeles. You probably saw these. The California is not like the rest of the country in some ways. For example, you know, in the rest of the country, you don't typically drive down the street and see huge. I mean, you do maybe now. But up until recently, you did not drive down the street in the average American town and just see huge, towering billboards advertising malt liquor. And you just...
Oh, you did in L.A., but...
Yeah, that's
but,
what I'm saying. Yeah. You also didn't turn on the television in, like, Ohio and see a TV spot where Ice Cube is coming in the door of a house party holding, like, 700 cases of St. Ides malt liquor. Let's see if I've got that St. Ides the malt liquor commercial that Ice Cube did. Hold on a second. I've got that around
you
here.
You can also find the Snoop Dogg Blast commercial on YouTube.
Really?
Yes. And he...
Wonderful.
Eater.com said, he's a modern Billy D. Williams. He's wearing a suit, and he's got his hair all slicked back, and he's drinking the Blast, and he's surrounded by attractive ladies.
Well, of course. Well, hold on. Let's see. Let's see if this is... Is this... I think this might be it. Is this where he's... No, this is the instrumental one. There's this Ice Cube St. Ides commercial where he's talking about... And he has the worst... Is this it?
Hey, yo, yo, yo. Crack the top on the verse with no rehearsal. And here's a brand new St. Ives commercial. From the I to the C to the E to the C to the U to the B to the E, and that's me.
Oh.
And I'm talking about the saint. Eyes more looking, it'll probably make you faint. And you'll paint the town red. After you take a 40 dog to the head. Me and the lynch mob crew like the gang up. On a court, cause it'll keep the gang up. And better relax me. Everybody wants some, so I gotta get a taxi. So I won't get a DUI is the reason. Can't go to jail this holiday season.
This... really, this is...
Here's the billboard, by the way, with
that's
Snoop Dogg
wonderful.
For the Blast.
That's fantastic.
Look at how cool.
Oh, yeah. That's great. You have to give it up to...
Serve over ice.
You have to give it up to Cube, though, that, I mean, that is a valuable lesson. You don't want to go to jail this holiday season.
And better relax me. Everybody wants some, so I gotta get a taxi. So I won't get a DUI is the reason. Can't go to jail this holiday season.
By the way, can I just tell you that this is an actual... So this was the radio spot. This isn't like a thing on his album. This was the radio spot that Ice Cube cut for St. Ives Malt Liquor.
And Snoop Dogg is apparently doing the same thing. He's mentioned the Blast soda repeatedly on Facebook, and also in a single on his new album, he mentions Colt 45 in the lyrics.
That's wonderful.
So
I'm trying to, let's see.
And a guy from Colt 45 says, that's just him being a true partner and saying, I'm not just an endorser.
He's a user. No.
Whether he's putting it in songs or having his posse drinking it, it's part of his lifestyle.
No. That is, that's like a, you know, you liked it so much you bought the company sort of a thing. Let me try one more here.
Come here. Give me that boom, boom. It's a full-time jack move. St. Ives malt liquor make the black move. And I tell when Tom, Dick, and Hank, who bought 8-Ball, you got gang. But with the black, not the copper. Cause the S.P. Crooked Eye is so proper. With the L-E-N-C-A-M-O-B. Plus a Tonkin and a 40. And here's how we'll greet ya. Pass your brew first time we meet ya. You feel dumb cause you didn't know. Ice Cube don't drink that other beer no more. Drink some and you won't change back. You say, I ain't never drunk a beer like that. Off the end of the bottle, you choke, show dogs in the house.
It'll pass the 12.
And if you wanna come up, pull to the store, get out, and then run up. Go to the counter with your five and buy 40 of the St. Ives.
That's wonderful.
Wow.
The one that I can't find here that I have somewhere at home, it's awesome. It's where Cube is. It's this, you know, the thing where it's like there's the party, you know, then you know somebody's at the door. Who could that be? You know, it's Ice Cube, and he comes in and he's wearing, I believe he's wearing a huge full length fur coat in Los Angeles, like in August, and he is just carrying case. It's like stacks upon stacks of St. Ives malt liquor in the case. And he's rapping about, I swear to God, and this was a thing you would see on television in Los Angeles. He was rapping about, it was about how it increased his own sense of masculinity and had certain aphrodisiac properties. but not only for him, also for the lady folk. And he explained that by use of the following rhyme. St. Ides will not only get your Jimmy thicker, it'll also help get the ladies in that mood quicker. And then he would just say, ba ba ba, St. Ides, malt liquor. And then he kind of looked at the camera with sort of a zang, you know. It was really one of the best things ever seen on television.
Well, back to this blast from Cult 45. Michael J. Skipa, public affairs director for this Marin Institute, said, we have always considered them, these sort of colorful, fruity drinks. They have actually a term for them in the industry, Alka-Pops.
Yeah.
He said, we've always considered them cocktails on training wheels. It's a way to bridge young consumers' fondness for juices and sodas to alcohol. Some people are saying, like this guy, that the beverages target kids. These New York young adults agree.
This is two?
Cult two, yeah.
Let's see.
It really does look like it's marketed to children.
It looks like something that would definitely cater to the younger generation.
Well, it seems like news organizations then are just operating as sort of inadvertent and ad hoc focus groups for cult.
And then New York City Councilman Robert Jackson is taking action.
What we're trying to say to the industry is, let's not market to our little kids. Let's market to responsible adults. And that's why
I wrote to
the State Liquor Authority, asking them to look at this.
Well, are you going to do that?
See, realize that people don't drink Colt 45 because they're being responsible.
Yeah.
People don't drink malt liquor because, you know, they want to enjoy the taste of a fine beverage.
No. If you are a listener, Jenny, you say, Jenny, by the way, who is a grown woman who says, where can I get one of these Snoop Dogg endorsed beverages? When it comes to getting my drink on, I don't like to waste a lot of time. This sounds perfect. I mean, it's a destination oriented drink.
And it's strawberry lemonade, just in time for the warmer climb.
It's like if you find that maybe the Boone's Farm is not getting the job done quite as fast as you need it. You know, the night train is not delivering the punch in the requisite amount.
And it does say serve over ice. So, you know, it's perfect
to chill.
A lawn party, for example.
Let breathe. God damn. This is back on something else we were talking about earlier, and then we'll wrap this up in a few so Don Taylor can skedaddle over to Cascadia.fm.
Oh, yeah, that's
for
right.
Ham-fisted radio. You can hear that at 4 p.m. at Cascadia.fm or via hamfistedradio.com. I wish I'd thought of this. This is back on the bee sting thing. Listener Rick says, after an ill-advised attack on the bee's nest that resulted in the death of his elderly parents, an obviously shaken son claimed, we are all bees today. You're a terrible person, sir.
Oh,
that's wonderful. Okay. Well, let's just end this. I promised a second Roger Klein song from his new album, Unida Cantina, and we will do that here in just a second. So we'll play. This is actually the first we'll close out the show with the first song that I heard off the new record, which is really just a one of the best things they've ever done. It's just a fantastically beautiful song. Somebody pointed out, by the way, that I am. When I was talking about the song Tell Your Mama, that I didn't actually say where it was from. That's from the album Honky Tonk Union, which I think was the first record that the Peacemakers put out after the refreshments went their separate ways, and he came back with the Peacemakers. So that is a Honky Tonk Union. So we'll do that here in a second. We'll play a song called Maria, which is just one of the best things that Roger Klein has ever done. He's going to be in town, by the way. I think they're going to be at Dante's Friday, May 20th. So we are angling to get him back on the show as we did last time. So I really strongly endorse you going to see Roger Klein. So we'll play that here in a second. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. We'll get to that top five that we can get to today. Also, the Taser Watch. And then Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. This Friday, talking about the life, work, and art of Ms. Roseanne Barr. So that is coming up this Friday. So forth. We want to thank Aaron Mesh, who joined us today from Willamette Week. You can read him in Willamette Week in print or online at WWeek.com. And you can hear Don Taylor in 41 minutes over at Cascadia.fm for Hamfisted Radio, along with Bobby Fatboy Roberts. Anything in particular on the agenda today?
Not really. Nope. Right. Although it is Crispin Glover's birthday.
Is it really?
Yes, it is.
You know, today 420? It is. So there's like it's everything. It's like the Waco thing is today, and the Hitler thing today, and the Columbine thing, I think, today. Mm-hmm. It's a day you ought to. It's like December 8th. Just a day you should stay home.
And today, Ryan O'Neill is 70.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. George Takei is 74. today.
Still sexy, though.
Still sexy.
All right. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, the Rick Emerson Show made possible by the very tolerant, the exceedingly tolerant Squires Electric, fine folks like yourself, and a generous grant from you, the Rick Emerson listeners and faithful. So thank you for listening. Thank you for spreading the word. As always, it never goes unappreciated. So thank you. And please do pass the word of this fine radio program and its socially reprehensible contents on to the children, especially. Market the Rick Emerson Show to children, won't you?
So we do it for the kids, like Snoop Dogg.
Exactly. It is Wednesday, April 20th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you tomorrow. Bye now. This is Marie from Roger Klein and the Peacemakers, their new album, You Need the Cantina, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll see you all tomorrow.
Four riders behind me, three bullets left, 2 hours till sunset, just one regret. Behind me, three bullets left, 2 hours till sunset, just one regret. I went lusting for gold and I found only lead. Lo siento, siento, Marie. Maria, Marie, even in death my heart waits only for thee. Maria, Marie, mi corazón pertenece. Ahora y siempre en vida o muerte solo a ti. Crying she stood in her white Sunday dress. The wide world awaits, I would ride to possess. My own envy and greed I let lure me away. When I knew in my heart with Marie I should stay. In death, my heart waits only for thee, Maria, Maria. Mi corazón pertenece ahora y siempre en vida o muerte solo a ti. Thank you.